Welcome, lady and gentlemen, to the 8th and only 8th episode of Tavern Tussle. As always, I am your co-host Cam Bams, and I am joined by...
your other co-host, Karateka.
And this week, we have a very, very special guest. It's my fiancé, Aaliyah.
I'll take Aaliyah, but that works too.
Aaliyah, yes. We figured, you know, like, she plays D&D, and she's my fiancé, and we were going to have her on eventually at some point. But then it's Women of Tabletop Gaming Month, and my favorite lady is involved in tabletop gaming. So here we go. So yeah, we're going to get to all the nitty-gritty role-playing details in Aaliyah's life. But first, let's talk about our weekly game.
Oh, God. I thought you were going to say something else.
Yeah, well, you know.
Our weekly game.
You never expect the Spanish Inquisition.
This is a pretty short talk.
So yeah, so we played my campaign, which Karateka and Aaliyah both play in. Aaliyah, do you want to describe who your character was?
So my character, I played a character named Mira Galanadel. She was an elven ranger with a jaguar companion. And
the jaguar's name was Jakar.
Thank you.
Which is badass.
She was pretty much my first like D&D character that I really got into. And now,
yeah,
now she's dead.
And you said before you were playing the wood elven druid, Valaric.
Yes.
Yeah. And so that was fun. So we're not going to spoil too much just because I know a lot of people listening are still playing through Tomb of Annihilation because it is such a long adventure. But we've already spoiled that there is a beholder.
Yeah.
In the Tomb of the Nine Gods. So we're sorry for that. We realized that too late. But this beholder fight took place with our party. It lasted for 2.5 hours. And no one survived. Well, technically, one character survived. Andy, who you know from an episode prior, his halfling barbarian actually was the only one to survive. But... he, you know, story-wise, he succumbed to the tomb because there's no way he was going to make it all the way to the end by himself. So, in some universe, Braxton is still walking those halls and slaying the undead, but in our universe, it's over. So, that campaign came to a grisly end. So, yeah, we're just going to stick with the one campaign now. We're just going to play one campaign weekly. Because playing two campaigns bi-weekly kind of like got to me a little bit, you know? So it's going to be nice just to focus on one game, one character, and all that stuff. Especially because I was playing one character and DMing. Like, you guys are playing two different characters, so I know that was kind of weird.
It wasn't...
going back and forth, it's you got to remember each individual character, who they are, and like, how you're role-playing them and all that stuff.
And even then, like, the character stuff, I'd say the character portion is a little bit easier. It's remembering all the story from the different campaigns that got a little bit grueling, I think, especially when real life got in the way and we weren't able to play for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
At that point, having to remember where we left off in a certain campaign when we're flip-flopping between them, that's where it got hard. So I think it'll be nice in that regard to be able to focus on one story, one character, until we inevitably end up playing two at once again, because it's probably gonna happen.
Yeah, because I keep complaining about being DM and wanting to play, but now that I don't have a campaign to DM, like, I feel lost.
And
we
just ended yours.
Yeah, like, I feel kind of lost. I'm like, what am I gonna do now?
Well, because you've been DMing straight for how many years now?
That's not important. No one needs to know how old I am. Since I was 13, so just put it that way.
Long time.
Yeah, so I mean, it's exciting, you know. It's always a weird feeling when a campaign comes to an end. Like, I know this is your first campaign, Aaliyah, so it kind of like stuck with you a little hard, just because, you know.
Well, yeah, and also I think, like, for me, I dedicate so much to my characters because they essentially become an extension of myself. You know, that's what Dungeons & Dragons is. You get to be whatever it is you'd like to be in this world. So I put a lot into Mira. I put a lot into her companion. So to have them both, well, to have her die and have him be turned back to his primal state It was hard.
I mean, technically he was petrified, so he's a stone statue.
Oh, did we decide that we're going with that? Because yeah. In my universe, he Braxton got his jugular torn out by my panther.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a complicated thing. We do a soap opera on that party and their dynamics, I swear.
And it's a wonderful thing from start to finish.
Yeah, the whole thing. But yeah, so that was exciting.
Exciting is an interesting word to use.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of ended the weekend on a weird note, especially because Friday, Saturday, and Sunday was a stream of many eyes.
Yeah.
And then we played that game Sunday night. So like all the D&D hype just all weekend was like I was just pumped and ready to play. And then it ended that way, and like everyone was just kind of like quiet.
Well, you played well. Unfortunately, our characters did not roll well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you guys got so close.
Yeah.
Like, if it would have turned out right, like, sad to say, but Aaliyah would have been the only one that died.
Although I will say, I'm increasingly bitter over the fact that my character died when the Beholder only had 28 hit points left, correct?
Well, I mean, that was, you know, that's information you found out later. So
information I found out later, but nonetheless, it was like, man, the two turns I had before it died, I missed four different attacks.
Yeah, I mean, but that's how the dice work, you know?
It is, but like, it's just one of those things.
And we don't fudge dice in our games, or you would have survived because you're the fiance, so that's what happens. But yeah, no, I mean, it's sad, I mean, because we've been playing this same campaign, at least me, Andy, and Kyle have been playing the same game since July of last year. So, you know, to see a campaign end in a TPK, it's kind of weird. Like, I wish, you know, we would have gotten to, like, level 20 and, you know, lived out the whole D&D fantasy. But it just wasn't the way that it turned out this time. So I'll just try harder next time.
Well, I think it's also a learning experience. Because, again, for me, this is my first campaign. So it's a learning experience to, like, we're not necessarily you need to get to, like, an incredibly high level before going at something difficult, but maybe be a little bit smarter and remember where your level's at, like, what it is that you have and how much you can do.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah. Because I think we went into it too soon.
Well, I mean, there was only way but forward.
Fair point. Yeah.
I mean, you guys were, like, it could have worked out in your favor. It was just some of the decisions made during the combat led to a negative outcome.
And that's just life.
Yeah. And that's just how it happens. But enough depressing, sad news about our campaign coming crashing around our ears. But the stream of many eyes.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Like it was a weekend just full of magical, magical moments and streams and such. I mean, they tried a lot of new things this year, which was interesting. And they had a lot of good groups play through games. I have to say, like, one of my favorite groups is that brand new group that they put together, the Rivals of Waterdeep. Like, I really liked that group and their dynamic, and they were really entertaining. I know you didn't catch that game, but it was pretty good. You can ask Aaliyah. I was, like, glued to the TV all weekend long.
Oh, yeah. I woke up at, like, 10 in the morning, and I'm still bleary-eyed, blinking. Where are you going? Well, the stream's starting. I was like, okay, go.
I gotta do D&D stuff. It's cool. Out of what you watched, Karataka, what was your favorite game that was played?
Oh, no.
On the spot.
God, that is so hard.
At least you're filling the awkward pause with sighs.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because, like, there was so much amazing shit going on. But it... I mean, Matt Mercer DM'd a game and played in a game, which were both amazing. Mark Holmes DM'd a game, which had three Critical Role members in it, which was just fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, I liked Matthew Lillard in that game too.
He's so funny. Like, that guy is awesome. Oh my gosh. But it's when I watched Jox Machina, it was just like the comedy side was just so entertaining. And I mean, the fucking Big Show was there. Like,
yeah,
that was a curveball. Like, who knew? Like, well, I mean, I don't know if they had like broadcasted that previously, but I had no idea he was going to be one of the members. And I thought that was fucking awesome.
Yeah, they'd released that information earlier when they announced Jox Machina. They said who was going to be in it.
Well, I think like not everybody knows like his actual name. So like seeing him. Oh, no,
they
him,
called him
like,
the Big Show.
Oh, did they? I completely missed that because I walked out and draw, I saw him. Because
no
like,
one knows, you know, his name's Paul. Like, no one knows that. They know, oh, it's the Big Show.
Yeah.
He chokeslams people for a living. And did you, oh my god, his hands were
gigantic.
His
hands were ridiculous.
Like when he shook everyone's hands at the end, their hands just like got swallowed by his.
It's one of those things where like I never really thought that I would look at people like Joe Manganiello and Travis Willingham and be like, you guys look tiny in comparison.
Right? Yeah. Oh man, they did not like hearing that.
But that was a really funny session. It was good. Their banter back and forth was.
It was very natural.
You know, yeah, it was nice. And then I just love that moment when Archon and Grog see each other for the first time after what happened in Critical Role Season 1, which you guys haven't watched, but it was spoiled for you. Yeah, I don't know. It was good seeing Grog come back because Grog was my favorite character from Season 1 of Critical Role. But yeah. And then Deborah Ann Wall.
Oh, yeah.
Her game was really good. And that was a homebrew game.
She surprised me because I've only ever known her as an actress, so seeing her DMing, I think there's just more people involved with D&D than I ever think I realized.
Oh no, yeah, she is a huge D&D player. Like apparently she has like a badass game room. She like DMs like 3 games a week or something like that.
I absolutely loved seeing her DMing because she also did really, I think honestly, like we discussed this earlier, I think I've been swayed a certain way on like how I think DMs should be just based on Matt Mercer and what I've seen from him. I think she was one of the only people who I watched, and I genuinely enjoyed her DMing, as opposed to just him.
Oh, I think also this weekend gave people a look into the different ways of playing Dungeons and Dragons. Because the way we play is, you know, we have a DM, and the DM sets the standards and the plot, and then the players react, and the whole story narrative is created by the DMing, the DM and the players reacting to each other's decisions and choices and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the players have free reign of doing whatever they want to do, but they're not the type of players that make up stuff for the plot. Like they're not, you know, all of a sudden making things up like, oh, I go into this tavern and I start this bar fight and I win and then blah, blah. Like, no, like you tell me what you do and then I tell you what happens because of it. But then we did see games where, you know, the DM and the players both made up plot points.
In particular, the one where I don't know who the DM was. I don't remember his name. But where they had the flashback coins.
Oh, that was a mechanic. So that's different. That's like a thing they turned in to make something happen because they wanted to shorten the game.
Mm-hmm.
But the there was another game, and I can't remember which one it was. But like the players would just talk about scenes that happened with no DM integration at all, kind of thing. And people do play Dungeons and Dragons that way because they feel like it's a collaborative effort. And like our way of playing is still a collaborative effort and everything. Like it's reactions that build the story and everything. But the players don't have free reign to just say whatever they want to happen happens. You know, They do something, the DM comes up with consequences, blah, blah. But from all the games that were streamed, like, this weekend, like, while they were all playing D&D, like, you could see different play styles and actions and how different groups form. And there's no right or wrong way to play Dungeons & Dragons. It's whatever you and your group are comfortable with. And if you don't like the way your DM does things, or you're a DM who's not a fan of the way your players behave or act, then it's not a bad thing to say, hey, like, I think I'm just going to play with a different group, you know?
Well, I'd hope, like, before that, the DM would, I think there should be, like, honestly, communication, like, because I think people are going to do what feels comfortable to them until they're maybe told that it doesn't exactly work properly, because we had to do that in our game, like, where we introduced, like, how we do initiative rolls, and we do the whole, like, 25 to 20, where we brought that in, like, that stuff that required, like, just a small amount of communication to be like, hey, we're going to do it this way. We're going to do this way. Because I think if you really enjoy the people that you're playing with, play styles can eventually evolve and mesh well.
I mean, even the way we do critical hits is different than the way other people do critical hits. And the way we do critical failures is vastly different than the way people do critical failures.
I thought that's how everybody did it around the board. I really did. And then I saw critical failures on different streams and I was like, this is interesting.
Yeah, no, we do it like a cutthroat way.
And I mean, yeah, no, watching so many games now, like, and don't get me wrong, I don't see a problem with them not having a, like, a more negative reaction to having a critical failure. But I, at the same time, I think it adds more flavor.
It does.
Especially, like, from the DM, if he can just come up with something, like, cool that happens. Well, I mean, it may not necessarily seem cool to the players, but, I mean, if you roll critical fail and something bad happens, like, it just gives more dynamics to the game. Just like, I mean, just like if you roll critical, like, why is rolling a 20 make you do so much extra damage, but rolling a 1, just nothing happens? You know what I'm saying?
Like, it adds more flavor. It definitely adds more flavor.
So I enjoy our rule of, like, if you're level, like, I'm thinking if you're, like, level 1 to 4 and you critically fail, and then what we do is you do a recovery roll. So you roll the d20 again, and usually if it's 1 through 10, or if it's 2 through 10, something bad happens. And if it's 11 through 20, then something bad happens, but it's not nearly as bad. And then if you roll 2 ones in a row, if you're level 1 through 4, you kill yourself. And then if you're level 5 through 20 or whatever, you just crit yourself. But that crit can have extenuating circumstances. Like, you can, like, you know, lose movement speed because you, you know, sliced your ankle off. Or, I mean,
I don't think we've gotten that far. But
yeah, but I mean,
just like anything, like, say, like, oh, you tripped and you fall prone, or oh, you, like, you went to swing with your weapon but you lose your grip and you throw your weapon, so now you have to go get it. Like, I mean, it could be, like, there's so many things that could happen from a critical roll, and they don't have to, I mean, critical fail, and they don't have to be so drastic. But yeah. I mean, there's so many ways, like, you can take it just to kind of,
it's just like having a consequence for the one as much as having a reward for the 20 kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because it definitely adds, like, the flavor aspect to it.
Yeah, and I just like that. You know, it's just a interesting homebrewed rule that just adds a little flavor to the game kind of thing. I mean, and the monsters, if, you know, if they critically fail, like, bad stuff happens to them too.
Yeah.
You know, so it's an all-around thing. It's not just a player thing.
Balance.
Yeah, but, I mean, so you just saw a lot of different styles of D&D this weekend, which I appreciate, because it showed people, you know, like, maybe there's someone that's unhappy with the way their group's doing things, and they see someone on a stream play D&D, like, the way they want to, and they're like, oh my god, that does exist.
Well, yeah, because I think as much as, like, D&D is growing, it's still such a, like, not a lot of people, I think, that we know do it. Like, you're still looking for people to play with, groups and stuff, so there's, it's not as easy to, like, share methods of playing with everybody. So having, like, the stream to watch and being able to unify different ways of doing things was cool. It was interesting. Because, yeah, there's a lot of information you get just from watching it, even in, like, the quick games they had to do.
Yeah. And, I mean, I enjoyed it. Saturday was a bit, because they did that at-the-table game, and then they did an off-the-table game where they were kind of, like, live role-playing as characters, and they would draw from the deck of numbers to, like, see what they rolled. Kind of thing. And that was interesting. I mean, you could tell, you know, it's like, it was the first time of them doing something like that, so it was a bit rough and everything, but, like, it showed you around, like, the set they built and everything, and the story of the games being played at the table coincided directly with the story of the off the table game. The only thing that I caught that kind of, like, I was like, oh, okay, that's funny, is when they were, the second part, they had to pick a door out of 4 doors. And the very first door they knocked on ended up being the right door. But because it happened at the very beginning, the dude who was DMing told her that nothing happened. And it was funny because she ended up getting arrested and being put in jail. And the camera panned in on her, like, when they found the right door. And she was like, but I chose that fucking door. it was funny. But, I mean, they needed to, like, feel time and actually, like, play the game and all that stuff. And if they just picked a door at random and walked up to it, like, from the first 5 minutes, that kind of killed the entire segment, you know. And, oh, my God, those music videos they would play. Like, I'm not saying they were terrible. I'm not even saying they were bad. Because I really like the one about the Xanathar. Like, I got my eye on you. That one. I enjoyed that one. It was just the same 4 ones over and over again. And oh my god, the D&D Beyond new theme song sung by Sam Riegel. Been haunting my every thought.
Dude, I freaking love it. Oh, my God.
I love it, but I keep waking up with it already in my head. It's been like 4 days, and I can't get any rest, thanks to Emmy Award-winning Sam Riegel.
Yeah, because, I mean, I saw the commercial, like, at least 50 times this weekend.
Yes.
So that's all I can think of.
Granted, it's amazing, and I would happily have it, like, as a ringtone.
It's great.
But I can't get any rest from it.
Yeah, come on, D&D Beyond. Ringtone that shit. Sell it for $1. You'll make millions. I mean, it's not a bad idea.
It's really not, because I would happily pay the $1 to have it as my ringtone.
Yeah. I mean, the production value of everything was cool. Like, the music videos were nice. And then the D&D Beyond videos between were very nice, because they give you background information into everything. It's just, you know, like, I think it would have been cool if they just would have had, like, you know, random stuff happening around Waterdeep. And then just have the camera pan around, you know, like between commercials kind of thing. But all in all, like, I enjoyed the Stream Mini Eyes quite a bit. It got me super excited to play D&D. And then I killed everyone. But hey, whatever. But now, the topic on everyone's mind, the new adventures. I was happy when they announced the first one, Dragon Heist.
Yep.
So I was like, that sounds awesome. It's like Ocean's 11. In D&D, it's badass, okay. And then just out of nowhere, they were like, oh yeah, and there's a second adventure, Dungeon of the Mad Mage. And I was like, ah. Like, I mean, Waterdeep is my favorite city in the Forgotten Realms. Like, you can ask Kyle and Andy, like, every game I've ever played, Waterdeep has been in it, kind of thing. Just because, you know, I read a bunch of novels and everything, it's just there, and so... For them to have two adventures, you know, directly in Waterdeep and then Undermountain after that, like, and it's 1 to 20 for both of them.
Yeah.
Yes, please. Like, I am so, so excited for this. Like, I want it now. Like, I don't want to have to wait for September and November. Like, I just want it, like, right now. Because, like, I just think the whole idea of that adventure, because, you know, you meet Volo from Volo's Guide to Monsters fame. He gives you a mission, and then after you do the mission, you get like an establishment. You can turn it into whatever you want. Like, you can make a tavern or something, you know? And so it's like that cool, like, the players are an adventuring party, but now they own a business, or they even just have like a headquarters kind of thing.
A headquarters would be kind of cool.
And it does give you, and they even like said it when they were talking about it, like, it get the Dragon Heist gives you a lot of room to role play.
Yeah, because you're in the city, and it's like New York City of D&D at this point. There's always something happening, you know? Like, you could have, like entire adventures just in Waterdeep of just random encounters kind of thing. But then to throw on this whole storyline of, like, a heist, we have to, like, keep the money from the bad guys. And that's what I thought was, like, super interesting, is they don't want you to kill the villain because you won't be able to, because you're only getting up to level 5 during that adventure. And these guys are, like, well-known figures in the Forgotten Realms. So there's no way you're gonna be able to defeat them, even though Chris Perkins says you'll have chances.
Oh, goodness. So right away, said
the opportunity will present itself,
yeah,
but it would be, like, ill-advised to attempt so.
So what I'm hearing is our party is going to die.
Yes. Exactly my thought. I'm like, Andy is going to go straight for it. We're all going to die, and then we're going to have to re-roll. It's going to happen, like, 4 or 5 times before maybe we finally don't try and kill them.
That's the beautiful thing about Dragon Heist, is it's replayable, like Curse of Strahd, because there can be a different villain every time.
I remember you mentioning this, yeah.
So
that you can just do so many different things. That's exciting. When it's not just a one and done.
Yeah, no, I am super, super excited about Dragon Heist. I think I'm more excited about Dragon Heist than Dungeon of the Mad Mage, but I can see Dungeon of the Mad Mage being just completely customizable. Like, you can do anything you want to that adventure, because it's 26 levels of dungeon. And each level of a dungeon is an entirely new environment.
We need to get you away from, like, levels, because we already saw what you did to Tomb of Annihilation, so I'm not
interested in going down levels. I followed the book on that one and tweaked little things here or there. Like, Dungeon of the Mad Mage is, like, level 1. Oh, it's, like, a dark slimy dungeon or whatever. But then level two, all of a sudden you're in a frozen tundra and there's like
Ember frost Kate Welch, giants. Like, is it Welch or Welsh?
Kate Welch, I think.
I remember her talking about it. Like, yeah, like every level is entirely different in those little like D&D Beyond commercials.
I mean, I think if it's taking you from level 5 to 20.
It's got
to
have a lot in it.
I mean, and there's 26 levels. Like, you could have one level where you're in space.
That's going to be amazing because I'm thinking about it from a character's perspective. That means that we're going to be as those characters in that dungeon for a very long amount of time.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll have to see if there is a way that you can travel between the dungeon and your hideout that you get in Dragon Heist.
Ooh, that would be interesting.
Because if you spend all this time building up like this tavern or headquarters, but then you spend level 6 through 20 in a dungeon and you can't even go back to like the base you established, you know?
Yeah, I wonder if they have like teleportation devices or something.
That'd be interesting. More so like for... Because I'm also thinking, like, rationally, like, for, like, rations and, you know, supplies. Well,
the one thing I do like, I don't know if there are, like, towns, like, mini villages that are established on each level or
whatever. And that's what I'm thinking is, like, it's going to be a whole fleshed out something. Like, there's going to be encampments of people. There's going to be trading villages and stuff.
Oh, so they're very large levels.
Yeah. And so it's like a whole other dimension almost.
That's incredibly exciting. Waterdeep. Because I want to, this is where I almost get like, it's like a bittersweet thing because I want to read it so badly, but you want to DM it so I can't read it because we're eventually going to play through it. Because that was my first thing is I was like, as soon as we get this, I'm going to read it. And then I realized I can't because I'm going to have to play in it.
She hasn't even touched Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes yet.
I'm trying to get through the DMG right now.
Well, you gotta, if you're not going to Dungeon Master anytime soon, you can switch over to that. Yeah, no?
Yeah. True, but still, you never know. We just lost a campaign. I could start one.
You're exactly right. You could, so do it.
I still have to get through the DMG.
Girls who DM are super hot. Just letting you know. No, and then to cap the weekend off altogether, they announced that there's going to be new campaign settings coming to Dungeons and Dragons, which I'm like, you mean homebrew heaven? What? Like, that's amazing. Because it's not going to be, like, a story. It's going to just be a campaign setting. Like, you know, Matt Mercer and Critical Role released the Tal Dorei guide.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And then, to an extent, Dragon Heist is kind of like a campaign setting just for Waterdeep. With, like, an adventure tacked on kind of thing. But I just want to know what the settings are going to be. Because they said settings.
What like the beautiful minds have cooked up for us to play in.
Yeah. And so far, the rumors are going to like Dark Sun, which is cool because Dark Sun was like a little bit in 4th edition. I really want Eberron to come back because Eberron was really big in 3.5. Like the Warforge and like the machinery and stuff like that. Like I want that like steampunk.
That'd be badass. D&D. Yeah. That would be bad. I mean, granted, like you could introduce that, but I think it's helpful when you have history to go off of instead of having to make up everything on your own. Yeah, I know some people do that, but...
Yeah, I mean, having all the knowledge I have of the setting, like, having a setting book just makes it so much easier to keep motivation to make a game in that setting kind of thing. I mean, do you know of any settings you would want them to be? Or you're just like, bro, it's D&D?
Huh?
Like, do you know of any other settings?
What? I'm trying to think of the other ones I'm talking about.
Because there's Ravenloft, Dark Sun, Eberron. There's the Dragonlance.
Yeah, I was going to say Dragonlance and what? Greyhawk?
Ravenloft, yeah. Greyhawk.
Okay. Same thing. Are the only ones I remember them talking about.
Good, because I don't know any other ones. So. Yeah, no, I mean, it's extremely exciting. Like, it's... This year is, so far, going to end up being a very good year for D&D. So, hey, whatever. Do you have anything else you want to say about the stream, Many Eyes?
I'm trying to think. No.
Pretty much, it was super cool. There was a lot of information in it. Yeah, it was really refreshing.
I mean, it was an abundance of information.
And again, just I'm seeing still everybody taking involved.
It. I mean, I worked Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah.
And like on my time off, I was like catching up on it. And then like when I got off work, on Saturday. I was like catching up on anything I missed on Friday. Fucking got off Sunday. I was catching up on anything I missed on Saturday, like, because they freaking let you replay it after, like, you know, each segment, and I, which I'm super fucking happy about. And, oh, man. Yeah.
It was good, though. Like, I'm so glad they're starting to do this once a year now. I almost wish it happened more, but I understand they can't release all these adventures because you have to give people time to play through them.
And well, even then, I think, like, doing the where people get together to just play, because I think it helps, like, when you have, like, the, you know, the creative, like, producers and everything involved, like, just that they don't just write for it. They still like it and they still play it, too.
Yeah.
Because it being your job and still enjoying it are two completely different things. So it's cool to see them, like, actually getting down and, like, down dirty, like, playing with it, too.
And I thought the funniest thing was, like, you see all these Twitter posts about how they were playing Dungeons & Dragons backstage while people were playing Dungeons & Dragons on stage. You're just like, I'm more interested in those games that are happening behind closed doors.
Yeah.
You know, like, I want to know everything.
Because I know Matt was playing in another one, like, behind closed doors, too. And that's one of my things where I was just like, but I want to watch him play more games.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. I'm glad it came. I'm sad that it's over.
I'm sure there'll be more. Like, as it gains popularity, I'm sure they'll go ahead and do more of them.
I mean, yeah, we'll see. But, I mean, that was a high dollar, you know, production with everything they put into it.
Okay, but you know what? They got to have some money with how popular this is. I'm sure they could do more.
Oh, and then the hidden gem of, I think, the entire weekend was Beetle and Grimm's Pandemonium Warehouse. The shit they are doing looks amazing. Like, I want those adventure boxes so bad. Like, they look amazing to have physical, like, pretty much anything that pops up in the game. Letters, journals, keys, stones, puzzles, maps, miniatures, like, anything that's in the adventure, you get a physical representation of. And I'm just like, think of how badass our DM or our D&D games would be if whoever was DMing had that.
Yeah.
You know?
It'd be amazing. That's why as soon as I saw it and as soon as I saw the price tag, I was like, I could rationalize that. I'm like, I could sit there and make excuses and reason it out with myself and purchase it and then cry myself to sleep later while I'm eating Top Ramen.
I mean, and that is the biggest thing, is I want this thing so badly in my life. But it's $500.
But they're only making 1,000 of them is the thing. Like,
we cannot afford $500 for that box. I'm sorry.
We can totally afford $500 for that box.
We cannot. So it's like I'm super excited that it's happening. And I, you know, I'm glad that something like this exists now. I just, it hurts me so bad because they're going to come out and I'm going to see Twit pics and all that stuff.
And he's going to want it.
I'm so sad. And I'm not going to, because, no, like, I draw the line at that. $500. Like, I haven't even bought the D&D Beyond Legacy bundle because it's like $200-some with the Critical Role coupon code. And I'm like, $200-some, I just can't do it. Like, I'm out on workers' comp right now. I don't have this money.
Meanwhile, I'm over here like, what credit card can I put this on?
Yeah, no, it's, oh my God. I love Dungeons & Dragons so much. Like I said, I've been playing it almost my entire life, but God, they're just coming out with amazing things.
I want to see freaking the line of wares that
Joe Manganiello.
Death Saves, yeah.
Yeah.
Is releasing.
Are you falling asleep over there?
No, I'm not falling asleep.
He's just listening to us go back and forth. He's like, why am I here?
No, yeah. My freaking eyes, like, twitching. And I'm like,
because you're so excited.
People can't see about your eyes,
Beetle
Christian.
And Grimm's Pandemonium Warehouse. Yeah, Death Saves looks really badass, too. I'm excited to see what kind of clothing line that Joe Manganiello comes up with.
Well, just because of the shirt that he was wearing in the stream I liked. Like, I would totally have you wear that.
Oh, that was badass how it said Death Saves on the front and had the rules for it on the back. I was like, that's sick.
So, you know, he puts that out. It. Like, I don't know. I'm excited.
Yeah, just to let you guys know who make D&D merchandise, I can afford a hat or a shirt every now and then. And, you know, I'll buy the adventure books. But, man, I want everything.
Yeah.
And I can't have the things because I am broke.
But it's cool to know that so much, like, more and more shit
yeah,
is coming out, because it is a growing I don't want to say hobby.
It's a growing field.
It's a growing, yeah,
field. It would even be cool if just, like, someone I knew bought it. Because then I just want to, like, see it, you know?
Yeah.
I just want to touch it.
Yeah.
Like, just breathe, you know, on it.
I necessarily don't want it so badly that I just, like, I'm going to spend the money on it, even though I shouldn't. Like, I just want to experience it.
Yeah.
I want to see the dragon scale. It's when they took out that dragon scale. That's what it was,
well, that's
right?
A different adventure they're not doing.
Well, even still, like, just seeing, like, what they could do, yeah, you know? Like, what it could have in it. That's where, like, I'm just like, oh.
Well, yeah, it's super beautiful. Exciting.
Matthew said that they had just opened, like, they just started that, right?
Oh, yeah. It's still a Kickstarter, so, I think. Isn't it? Or, no, they finished Kickstarter. Now they're actually...
They started, like, a year ago.
They opened the business with Stream of Many Eyes.
And then who knows? Like, and it's a fresh thing, just like Des says. Like,
who knows? When the Stream Many Eyes started, what else is when they opened business
coming out in the near future with
It's Matthew Lillard, and I think he said four of his best friends did it.
I wonder how many people have already bought something, though. And I think that's what, like,
On Twitter last time, they sold over 100 last time I saw.
Oh, because there's only 1,000, and that's what stresses me out. Is I'm like, we don't have the money now, but we could later, and by that time, it's already going to be gone, and I lose sleep.
Babe, we're not going to have the money. This is chill.
You know, but what? I'm just
really excited that it exists. And yeah. I just want to experience it. Because it seems like... I feel like that level of Dungeons & Dragons would just be amazing. Because it's not on the level of LARPing. But it's like... Holy shit. My character just found this journal page in the game. And I'm holding it and reading it in real life. Like, this is another person's handwriting. Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's just cool to me. So I'm super excited to see that happen. I didn't want it. Okay. Moving on. Good. But that was the Stream of Many Eyes. You know, it was a good time. Good time. Now on to Aaliyah. I know you've talked a bunch, but we're going to talk a little bit more. That's what happens. So you played D&D for like 2 weeks, like a year ago, and then decided it wasn't for you.
Yeah. I had not necessarily conflict with one of the players, but I just decided like it wasn't for me. I didn't want to be involved. And also I think it's because I don't think I started at level 1, because the first character I ever played was a tiefling druid named Reverence. And I don't remember what level I started
level 5.
At. And there we go. Is my thing is I'd never played D&D before, and then all of a sudden I got thrown in to level 5 and chose a druid as my first character ever and could not wrap my head around everything properly. So I couldn't figure it out. I tried it out and it just wasn't for me at the time. And then you introduced me to Critical Role.
And that's when it started.
It really is. And it's kind of just, I saw D&D the way that I wanted to play it, with like a certain level of description, with the actual role-playing aspect. And I was like, okay, this is what it can be. This is totally up my alley. I'm like, let's try this again. So that's when I came into the campaign last November, the one that, you know, we all just died on. No big deal.
Yeah.
I came in last November, created Mira at a level 5, and I chose, you know, an elven ranger because it was a bit simpler for me. And I just hit the ground running. And it was a lot of fun. Like, I play in the 2 different campaigns. I have my other character, Cora, who is a halfling wizard.
Best friend to Goliath Rogue, Egon Crow, Karen Tornico.
Yeah. For now, anyways. As if he keeps stealing her gold,
that word
it might
loosely,
be.
Because I'm pretty sure you've robbed her. Like,
he also killed her.
We are best friends.
Killed her.
Okay, you critically failed. I just so happened to be the article which the DM used to kill you.
But point is, you still killed her.
And I brought you back with healing potion.
Good job. Brought me back with healing potion. But point being, yeah, I know. So I hit the ground running with Mira and... It's been good. I think it also helps a lot that you switched to playing, because at that point I had someone to bounce off of. And then when you joined too, like, you have a very similar, I think, role-playing style that I do. So having people who actually role-play totally helped. with how I play D&D. And I just had a lot of fun with it. It's a really, like, fun way to just de-stress. It gives me something to look forward to throughout the week. And it's just fun. It's a fun hobby to have. And it just so happens that it's one of yours as well.
Would
so
we get to bond very well. Would you say it's therapeutic?
In a sense, kind of. Because I am so stressed out with work. So then I come back and I get to, you know, delve into this whole other world and just be this character and have different goals to work towards. Like, there's, it's just, I wouldn't say a simpler world, but I don't know. The problem solving, I think, is easier to get through than just dealing with, like, regular
honestly, life. Like, one thing that I love is that when I'm playing D&D, I don't even think about my real life.
Yeah, no.
Like, I completely, I don't want to say forget, but I just, like,
it takes
my mind travels to a different place where I don't, like, I'm thinking about what's going on in this world. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think about anything that's going on in the other world.
Would you say it's group therapy?
I mean, I would.
I mean, hey, it's brought me closer with that other player that I had problems with before, so I'd consider us friends now.
And we've talked about that before, how your, like, D&D group and playing with these people for, like, an elongated period of time does give you a certain type of bonding experience.
Because you get to see these people, and because I understand, like, obviously not every person plays their character in the way that I do. I mentioned earlier, like, I make my characters almost an extension of myself. Not in every regard, but I put a bit of myself in every character. And it's just my character creation. I can't ever distance myself quite so much from my characters. I think it helps that we get to see each other in different scenarios and view each other's way of problem solving, of just getting through, like, the most difficult things. Like, that person's character sacrificed themselves for me in the game, and it's just, like, one of those things that's not going to happen in real life, but you get to see sort of how it would happen in this other universe. And it's just, it's definitely a bonding experience, because also we see each other every week. We get together for 4 or 5 hours in that week. It's, yeah, like, you, I think you kind of just end up being close with your D&D group.
Yeah, I mean, because it's a, because everyone who plays, except for me, is super busy. Like, I mean, everyone else besides me and Leah have children, you know, they work jobs. You
I mean,
know,
I
they,
work
they
jobs,
have
but
things that go on in their life. And, you know, like, D&D is that one time a week where, you know, like, everything just chills and stops. And we get to, you know, roll some dice and fuck up dragons and stuff. It's just, it's good. It's fun.
Good. Like, it's not really something that I ever really saw myself playing at all. I never thought I'd be into D&D.
That's what Andy said.
I feel like that's the common, like, consensus for a lot of people who have never played. It's like, I don't feel like that's something I would do.
There's such a stereotype, I think, to playing D&D.
Exactly.
Like,
yes,
only a certain group of people, like, air quotes, play it. And so, like, you don't really ever see yourself playing it until you have that one person who kind of brings you in. And yeah, like, it's a little strange to get into at first, I think, like, getting used to role-playing, like, your character. But once you understand, like, the mechanics of it and you realize that this is just another game, that kind of, I think, takes all, like, the bars off of it. We're like, okay, like, it's something that I can do, and it's fun because you really can do anything in it.
So let me ask you this. Being a significant other whose partner played D&D before and kind of got you into it, what would you tell someone's, like, boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife who didn't play D&D but their partner did? Like, how would you, you know, let them know that maybe you should try it sometime?
I'll put it to you like this. D&D is another hobby. So in the same way that if you had a partner who just really was into soccer or who really likes video games or who's really into music, like, you want to be a part of what your partner likes and enjoys. You want to, like, be interested in it, even if it's just listening to them talk about it. Like, you want to at least give it a shot because it's something that matters to them. And I think it's always helpful when you find a way to marry your hobbies and at least, like, give it a try, because it brings you closer as a couple too. And it just so happens that with this, like, with D&D, you also get to do stuff, like, for yourself. Like, your character is very much your own. Their motives are their own. And it's a lot of, it can be a path of, like, self-discovery as to, like, what you, like, are seeking too. So playing, I think, with your partner and at least giving it a try, like, it's a matter of letting go of whatever, like, preconceived notions you have in relation to role-playing and just giving it a shot, because it can be a lot of fun. And again, like, you end up making friends, like, and you can end up really, really enjoying something that you thought wasn't going to be for you. It's a matter of, like, just give it a try, because the worst that can happen is that you're just not going to like it. But then at that point, like, you gave it a shot. And really, it's kind of like reading a book if you have the right DM. Like, it's kind of like having this world that you have in your head come to life. And instead of simply reading about it, you are in it. And that's really the best description that I can give of it. It's like being a part of a novel. It's being a part of this story and just getting to experience all of it. Yeah. And I think that's amazing.
I think another thing that helped you is that now it's not me going away for 5 to 7 hours weekly and leaving you home by yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you're actually, like, now part of that kind of thing. Yeah,
because I didn't want to be the person just sitting in the corner, like, just, you know, my boyfriend's here, so I'm just going to chill on the couch. Like,
yeah.
That was never interesting to me, like, actually playing. And it also helped that when I wasn't playing, you guys played here for a little bit. So I could kind of, like, see and hear what it was, like, the mechanics of it and go from there. But, yeah, no, like, I think also, like, watching Critical Role and, again, like, seeing, like, the relationships between characters, I think that's also what really got me interested, is because when I played, like, I didn't play long enough to build up any relationship between the characters.
Yeah.
So seeing, like, again, what it can turn into, like, motivations, like, between different people and, like, building genuine friendships, like, in character, appealed to me. So I think that's also what, like, brought me into it, is, like, okay, like, this can be, it's a group thing. It's not just you figuring out how to cast a spell. Like, there's so much more to it than I think what people see on the surface.
Yeah. And so now we got to get your lady in, Karateka.
Yeah.
It's got to happen.
Well, I mean, just like she mentioned, there's just, I mean, it's not that she's opposed to it. It's just getting her to try it. And it's just those preconceived notions. But she, stream of many eyes, did something for me, because she is a huge WWE fan. And when she saw that the Big Show was playing D&D, it just, like, I feel like it kind of clicked something in her head. Like, there are people out there who you think would be the type of people who wouldn't play D&D because you have preconceived notions about them. Like, oh, he's this big badass, like, wrestler guy. He doesn't play D&D. He's not a nerd. No, that's fucking wrong. Just because you do this in life or this in life doesn't mean you can't do other shit in life. Like, there's so many, like, sides to people and what they enjoy. They don't have to just be one thing. And when she saw that, she was like, what the fuck? Like, the Big Show is playing Dungeons and Dragons? I was like, yeah, lots of people play Dungeons and Dragons.
And it just goes back to one of those things. You can be anything you want to be in D&D. And, like, going back to the Stream of Many Eyes, like, Jax Machina, that, like, the scene where they're asking them what they see in the portal, where his character says that, like, he looks into it and sees all, like, the hopes and dreams that he couldn't have. That was some deep shit. Like, I don't think anybody really expected, like, an actual response, like, a deep response. And he gave one. And for all of them, like, being there, sitting there, and for him to be the one that had, like, that deep response, I was like, okay, like, there's more to you than the wrestling image that everybody sees. You can be anything you want to be.
And that was followed by expert role player Travis Willingham as Grog saying, I see a lot of naked women and beer everywhere. So
that was perfect. Awesome.
Perfect.
Oh, man.
You know, it was good. I enjoyed that quite a bit. Yeah, I know, because we were talking to her last night, and she's like, yeah, the Big Show plays. I want to play. So I was like, let's make it happen.
Hey, we can give it a try, because I think it also comes down to, you have to know the people. I personally needed to know the people that I was playing with, because I also started playing with Andy and Kyle before I really, like, knew them. Now that I kind of know them more, I'm more comfortable, because you do have to be comfortable with the group that you're playing with, so I believe.
Yeah, especially if it's your first time, and especially if you're kind of hesitant in the first place, just jumping into a random group of people you don't know.
It's nerve-wracking.
It could be... Yeah, it could be a little stressful, I can imagine. I fortunately have always played with people that I knew, so that was awesome.
And just, like, from my perspective, like, it's incredibly nerve-wracking, especially when you don't understand the mechanics of D&D just yet, because there are a lot of rules. And just understanding a turn, I mean, you have your action, your bonus action, your movement, and that can be daunting. I still have to stop and, like, check myself. Like, Andy was helping me with Mira's sharpshooter, like, the number that I had to add onto it, and I've been playing since November. So I think, like, especially when you're first starting out, like, joining a group that you are familiar with plays a huge role in whether or not you enjoy it.
Not only that, you have to make sure, I mean, this goes with any party, I feel like. When you're going to play a game like this with somebody, don't play with douchebags. Like, yeah. If somebody doesn't know how to do something, they don't know a rule, they don't know how, like, this spell works, or, like, can I move and do this? Like, whatever the case may be. And then, like, people are like, fuck, man, like, now we have to wait because you don't know this. Like, those guys are fucking douchebags, and don't play with them.
Yeah, no, yeah. Like, and that's the thing about our table is, like, anytime anyone has a question, like, multiple people grab their, like, players' handbooks and start looking it up and stuff. So, I mean, it's cool. But, I mean, maybe soon I'll have the D&D Beyond. No, I can't.
I'm telling you, I want it so bad. Don't worry, guys.
Next episode, we will tell you how he got D&D Beyond.
And how we suddenly have two new tablets.
No. Man, we don't have money for that. Anyway. So, yeah, I mean, I enjoy very much that you have taken to Dungeons & Dragons, like, the way that you have.
Well, you wanted me to play so badly, too, when we first moved out here.
I knew you would enjoy it.
I think it also just me being the person that I am, because I've always been an avid reader, despite the fact that I can't seem to finish any single one that I purchase, and I purchase a lot of them. But
books, she means.
I meant to say books. Did I not say books?
No.
I meant to say,
like,
books.
Two or three times, you, like, the last word should have been books, and you were just like, I purchased so many of them.
Yeah.
Details. Anyways. Go away, Christian. So I read.
His name again.
I read a lot. And I used to write online. So I think that's also where I had an issue with how we first played, is just me being the type of person that I am, since I was so used to all that detail and description, not really knowing how to do that myself just as a player.
Yeah.
It's what threw me off the first time, too. So now when we play, I try to throw in, like, descriptions of, like, how my character is moving, her facial expressions, like, any actions that she, you know, does. Didn't really get to do that too much this past game, but yeah. That was also, we hadn't played in, like, 5 weeks.
Yeah, that campaign, it was rough. But, I mean, I think that with Karateka, Christian, whatever your name is, with you coming back.
Who are you?
And then with me being a player, like, the role-playing has gotten a lot better.
Oh, God, yeah. With everybody in the group.
So, it really has. And that's a big factor of how much we enjoy the game.
Yeah.
Is the role-playing that goes on.
Because I think it builds a good relationship between the players and the DM, too. Because the DM, I guess they don't have to give you details, but it certainly helps when they do. And I think the DM feeds off of his or her players in giving that amount of detail back. Because it gives them that enticement to be, okay, they're interested in these details. Let me provide them too, and at which point the characters will provide some back. Like, it just creates a good, you want to have that communication.
Yeah, and I mean, in the past two characters that Kyle and Andy have been the most descriptive backstories they've ever come up with.
I don't know, now that you killed Kyle's other character.
But I mean, you have, like, having a character backstory like that in depth, and then seeing a payoff happen with that backstory in the game. Like, that's a rewarding experience for both the Dungeon Master and the player, because it's saying, I took the time to create this backstory and interweave it in your world that you're presenting to us, and the DM pays you back by, I took in your backstory, and here's an entire story arc about your story, kind of thing.
It's interesting, because, I mean, you have to think that these characters are being built and portrayed as real individuals in a real world. So in the same way that we have all this depth to our pasts, our characters should have the same. There's definitely a difference between giving us, like, the tragic backstory versus a legit backstory, but yeah. It's useful.
I'm an orphan. I was raised on the streets, and now I'm a fighter.
My parents were both shot in front of me, and then I was raised by bats.
I killed my parents in a fire. Oh, shit. Now you're getting crazy on us. No, yeah. But yeah, no. It's just one of those things, like, I love D&D. And being able to share it with the person that you love just makes it even more special. Ain't that right, Christian?
Yes, it is.
Oh, hey, Leah. Didn't see you there.
I knew it.
Yeah. But, yeah. Do you, either of you have any closing thoughts for this week?
Just, I think what I said earlier, just abandon any preconceived notions you have about D&D and give it a shot. Because odds are you're really, really going to like it. And you'll make a lot of friends.
Yeah, and just to kind of play off what she said, don't think, just everything in life comes with experience. Everything in life comes with experience. You're not going to hop into something brand new to you and just be the best or know exactly what you're doing 100% of the time. It's not going to happen. It's unrealistic. You shouldn't think that way. Just don't set yourself up for failure. Understand what it is. Play the game, enjoy it, learn, grow, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think that's important because if you pick up a pad of paper and a pencil for the first time ever, you're not going to be able to draw, you know, a full portrait of, you know, somebody. Like, everything takes practice. And D&D, you know, like, while it is a game that you can just pick up and play, never having played before, it takes practice in a sense that you have to get used to the environment you're in and the people you're playing with. You know, what level of role playing are they doing? What rules are they following? Kind of thing. Because every group's different. And so the more time you spend with it, the better off you'll be. But yeah, but that was us this week. Thank you very much, Aliha.
Thank you for having me.
On our podcast. I mean, we do live in the same house, but here we are. And yeah, as always, you guys can follow us on Twitter at Tavern Tussle. And you can follow Karateka on Twitter at Karateka.
And you can follow us on Facebook at Tavern Tussle.
And you can send us an email, taverntussle@gmail.com. That's right. Twitter or Gmail is the best ways to get in touch with us. Just saying. So yeah. But thank you very much, you guys, for joining us this week. Thanks for listening to Ramble. We hope you enjoyed the stream of many eyes as much as we did, because I'm still, you know, just sorting through everything. Cannot wait for Waterdeep Dragon Heist and Waterdeep Dungeon of the Mad Mage. Cannot wait for new settings. It's an exciting time to be a D&D player. I really hope you guys feel it, you know. So, yeah, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you very much for listening. From the bottom of Karateka's cold, dark recess, he thanks you. And from the bottom of Aaliyah's beautiful, compassionate bosom, she thanks you. So, thank you very much. Oh, we hope you have a wonderful week.